Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
I was having lunch with Dr. Russ Greenfield, and he said, "You really need to talk to my wife." And I'm like, "Great, fine." He said, "She ran for public office for the first time in her 60s. And I'm like, I'm hooked. And she was elected to the state house. So it took a while because she's obviously very, very busy right now, having just finished the primary. And I don't think she has opposition in this district. Julia Greenfield will be stepping in the very big shoes of John Autry, who's retiring from the state legislature. This is the district now called House District 100 for people around here. But she was inspired by, you guessed it, the election of 2016. We talk a lot about that. It was really a privilege to meet Julia Greenfield.
I don't believe in being nasty towards people, no matter, you know, what their belief is. I believe we have to listen to each other.
This is In Her Words, a podcast from manlisting.com, featuring one man listening to the stories of real women in their own words. In Her Words, a conversation worth hearing, because every woman deserves to be heard.
Hey there, and welcome to In Her Words, the podcast. I'm Stuart Watson. I don't talk to people who run for office nearly enough, because it's not just about politics. All politics is personal these days. We all have a stake in it. And I think politics is one thing, but talking about public policy and how it impacts all of us is fair game. It doesn't have to be nasty. So join me in welcoming Julia Greenfield.
Where were you born?
Princeton, Illinois.
I don't even know where that is.
It's right outside Champlain, Illinois.
It's cold. I've been there.
Yes.
The wind cuts straight across the, and the university is right?
University at Champlain, yes.
Right.
University of Illinois at Champlain.
That's the big one.
That's a big one. It's a really good university. My understanding, we moved to Charlotte when I was 3 years old, so I didn't get to know as much about Illinois as if I had grown up there, but my father was from the Midwest and my mother grew up in Tennessee. Both grew up on farms. My dad grew up on a corn farm in Kellogg, Iowa, and my mother grew up on a cattle farm in Athens, Tennessee.
What, if anything, did your mother tell you about her pregnancy, labor, and delivery with you?
Well, with me, I was a little bit of a difficult pregnancy. She had to go on bed rest, I believe, about 2 months before I was born, and I actually came 6 weeks early, and I weighed 5 pounds and 13 ounces, and when they brought me home, I lost the 13 ounces. So they were very nervous with me. I was tiny, I was kind of bluish color, and then I had colic for the first 4 months, so I was a real joy to have around.
And where were you in the birth order?
I'm the first.
Oh,
and they did have a second one.
Wow. And so this was their first exposure. That's got to be nerve-wracking.
Yes.
And so they were always happy that you got to be healthy.
Yes, yes. I grew to be 5'8" and very healthy, so all is good.
Did your mother ever tell you anything that helped you as a mom?
She did. She told me whenever the baby is sleeping, I should sleep. I can be somewhat driven in making sure the house is clean or this or that's taken care of. She knew that about me. And so her advice was, whenever they lay down, you lay down. And that was very good advice.
What brought your parents to Charlotte?
They were living in Iowa at the time, or in they moved from Illinois to Iowa, and it was too cold. It was too cold, and my mother, being from Tennessee, she just was sick of the weather. My dad being willing to move, so he was in banking. He was at NCNB at the time, which became Bank of America. And they just really sort of took their finger and they said, Charlotte looks great. It's kind of close to the ocean. It's close to the mountains. There's banking there. And that's how they chose.
Where did you go to high school?
Garinger. So I grew up on the east side of Charlotte. My high school years were so much fun. We were one of the bigger high schools. I had lots of friends, very active. It was a great time. I had a great time.
You would be remembered at reunions as what?
A friend of mine I grew up with just sent me a text message the other day, and she said, I remember you as always being so kind, and that you always would make friends with people that maybe other people wouldn't be friendly with. I don't remember. You know, I just remember I always try to extend to anyone. That's just sort of who I am. But I appreciated her remembering that about me, because I wouldn't say that about myself, because I guess I've just always felt that way and I didn't see it as anything to talk about.
So what were your sort of extracurriculars in high school?
I have always loved tennis. So I have always played tennis.
You still play?
I'm still playing.
How often?
Well, I just played this morning. I play for the Jewish Community Center for the Queen City League, and I've been playing for them since 2004.
And do you get competitive?
I get competitive in my mind, against myself. Not so much against other people, but in my head, I get competitive with just myself. I don't do that. I'm not that competitive. I'm really more at this stage of the game out there to have fun and to just socialize with the women, and it's really a great camaraderie. And most of us are really, we know we're not going to the U.S. Open, so we're really all of us out there just to have fun and spend time together.
At what age did you sort of become politically aware?
I have always been politically aware because my dad was.
Mm.
So when I could vote, started voting, I've always voted. And I've always voted in every election because I knew from my dad in particular how important that was. And he had always said, people died for our right to vote and you need to use that right. So I've always been aware of politics, and I've always known that voting was really, really important because that's our voice. And that's how one of the ways that we can make change if we feel we need to make the change.
Who's a politician when you were sort of coming of age as a teenager that you said, I admire blank? Could be anywhere in history.
I really liked Jimmy Carter.
Because?
I thought he was kind, and I thought he was always driven for the right reasons. And I don't know that you can ask for much more than that. I thought he was smart. Of course, he's ended up being a fabulous, ex-president. But I think that just shows who he was as a person when he was president.
The fact that people would migrate. I grew up 30 miles from Plains. And I'll always regret not going to the Big Bash in 1976 because I was a senior in high school.
Right, right.
During the election. And I took it for granted that Billy Carter would come to your town and stand around and drink beer,
Right, right.
So I never really fully let that sink in.
Well, you were young.
And tons of friends of my parents, it was like 1 degree of separation to people who worked in the White House. When I talked to when I met Hodding Carter much later, it was like we had this sort of commonality.
Right, right.
This common language. Did you ever see politicians speak, meet them personally? members of Congress or the legislature or?
Not until these most recent years.
And did you get involved in any campaign or like political activity when you were?
Not when I was young, but I have in the most recent years.
What radicalized you? I mean, what got you off the couch?
The presidential election of 2015.
What about it?
I got really, really nervous when I saw Donald Trump kind of ascending the ranks within the Republican Party. And then when he won the presidency in 2016, after a day of crying and feeling like I couldn't get out of bed, I said to myself, I have to take the emotions that I'm feeling and I'm going to have to put them towards positive action. I have to make some changes or help make changes. And so I started volunteering for two grassroots organizations here in Charlotte. One is called Swing Left Charlotte and the other one is Indivisible Nine. They have since most recently joined together and they're called Indivisible Charlotte. But from 2017 on, I've worked for, you know, volunteered for different Democratic candidates. We canvassed, you know, wrote postcards, did phone banking, text banking, made phone calls, marched for, you know, different causes that I believe in, women's rights, gay rights, smart gun legislation. So I've been doing that for about the past 8 years. And it has introduced me to a whole new world, but I'm very passionate about righting the ship of where I see our country might be headed. And I'm very worried that too many Americans don't seem to understand how valuable democracy is and how lucky we are to have that. And so I plan to keep working towards saving our democracy and getting the right people into office. And in my case, it would be the Democrats.
What did Indivisible Nine refer to?
It was a district. Nine was a district, yes.
What kind of a district?
It was just one of the districts here in Charlotte. I think it's where the ladies originally came from. And now it's become a national organization. So there's Indivisible... I don't even know what it's Indivisible. There's Indivisible North Carolina, I think, and I think it's across the states. But Nine and Swing Left Charlotte kind of joined forces, and now Indivisible Charlotte.
You play tennis at the Jewish Community Center. Are you Jewish?
I am not. My husband's Jewish, and we raised our children Jewish, so my home is Jewish. We made that commitment when we decided to get married. When we were dating seriously and my husband said to me that it was important for him that his children were raised Jewish, I told him I don't know enough about Judaism to make that commitment, but I'm willing to learn. So for about 2 years, we took, interfaith classes. My parents got involved. We had lost his father by then, but his mother came to some of them. And really, in the end, I thought if my children could turn out to be like my husband, I really could not ask for more because he's really one of the most wonderful people I've ever met.
I do. That's how I met you, is he said, you have to talk to my wife. And when I heard
he's
your story.
He's a great cheerleader of mine.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Because there are plenty of husbands who would say, you're doing what?
Well, Russ is one of the reasons that I accepted this offer to run for office. He was one of the people that talked me into it.
Now, did you work outside the home?
I was a nurse. Worked at CMC Maine, which is now Atrium. And then I left nursing when we had our first child.
Mm-hmm. What kind of nursing did you really?
Emergency medicine.
Oh, wow. Adrenaline junkie.
Yeah, yes. I never knew I was until I started working there. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed taking care of that sector of the population. A lot of people who are in bad ways. And one of the things about the emergency department that I always thought was really cool is the doors are never closed. We are always open for anyone who needs to come in and be seen. Mm. And I like that.
Yeah. And it can be a heartbreaking place.
It can be heartbreaking, and it can also be a joyful place. It depends, but it's a lot of things. But it's boring is not one of them.
Yeah. Did you participate in the Women's March?
Here in Charlotte, I did. I could not get to D.C. because we were not in town, and I was really bummed by that.
Trump represents many different things to many different people. What was it in particular that you found most distressing?
Wow. Well, during the presidential campaign, when I saw, really in the beginning, when I saw how he spoke to the other Republican candidates who were running for president, how he made fun of how they looked and the nicknames he gave them, it was very disturbing to see. And I thought, surely he will not be chosen. He's so ugly, so mean to people. He's a bully, is what he is. And then as I saw he seemed to be gaining a lot of popularity among the Republican Party, then when he made fun of that disabled reporter, I thought, that has to be the end of it. And it wasn't. And I couldn't believe it. Then when there was the audio of him speaking about how he can just assault women because he's famous, I thought, that has to be the end of it. And I came to learn in a very sad way, for me, people are very willing to overlook some really heinous speech and admitted physical attacks to get what they feel they want. And I found that so disturbing and so sad, and he has no humanity. And of course now he lies and he's a criminal, and just everything about him is and he's not smart. Where he's smart is he knows how to play the victim, and he knows how to bring that out in people who maybe are unhappy with their lives, and they're not, in my opinion, willing maybe to look at decisions they have made to put them where they are. And so everybody needs a scapegoat, because it's much easier than to really look at yourself and where am I, what decisions did I possibly make to put myself here. And on the other hand, I also recognize that there is a sect of the population here that feels they have been ignored. And I don't think the Democratic Party or the Republican Party have done a very good job representing those people. I really don't. However, I believe in humanity, and I believe in supporting leaders who are driven by the right thing, and leaders who will represent all Americans. And Trump is a racist bigot, and he's not going to represent everybody. And we can't have him at the top of the ticket. He cannot have the most important position in the world. He cannot have that again, because he's already started us with this MAGA movement that has become bigger than him now. I thought when he wasn't president anymore and we got President Biden in there, we would be kind of done with him, but it seems to have grown. And then with the insurrection, which he started, he planned, I have to fight against that. I have to fight against that.
Has it really grown?
I think that's a really good question. I think you're right in asking that. I don't know that it's grown in numbers, but it's certainly gotten louder and uglier. And the Republican Party, you know, it's just horrible to me to watch these Republican representatives who, you know, January 7th after the insurrection were, you know, Donald Trump's responsible for this. He did this. And now they're all falling in line behind him again. No one seems to have a backbone and is willing to stand up against this man. If people would stand up against him, he would not have power. And they're not willing to do that. And I don't understand that. And it's very frustrating. So I believe in fighting back. And that's why I said yes to running for this seat in the General Assembly representing House District 100 here in Mecklenburg County.
They could have appealed to a great many people. What did they see in you? What did you do in those 3 or 4 years, or five, from 2017 to 2022, 2023, that they asked you?
That's another good question, which I'm not sure I have the answer to. I think you'd have to ask Drew Cromer.
Who's when Drew came to you.
He feels that I have a good knowledge of what's happening here in the state, and that I have a respectable way of presenting the facts and maybe refuting some things, but in a way that is respectful to whoever I'm speaking with. I don't believe in being nasty towards people, no matter what their belief is. I believe we have to listen to each other, and we need to learn from each other. And I think maybe that was part of it. He has seen that in me, and I think that was what was shared with me.
You're bound to run into people, could be neighbors, family, friends, social network, who voted for Trump, who are unapologetic about that. What kinds of discussions are you able to have with them?
I'm willing to have a discussion about anything. I do have friends who voted for Donald Trump. I have friends who did not vote for him the second time. I had a couple of friends who did vote for him the second time. I have a couple of friends who may vote for him again, this coming November. I like to talk about, I like to share facts. You have to be careful about that, because lots of times people think, well, where are you getting your facts? I'm getting my facts from here. Why are your facts better than my facts? So I have to develop a relationship first, and they need to kind of trust me a little bit. And I may not change their mind when we have the conversations with maybe a woman's right to choose and a woman's right to be able to have her make her own decisions about her body. But I always think, and I'm always driven by hope, which always keeps me moving, that you could plant that little seed, and they may not outwardly admit that what you said may have made a little difference, but it just might. And I always go on that I am always hopeful. Without hope, I wouldn't be doing this, because what would be the point? So I am always very hopeful that we can make the change. I am really hopeful about November. I think we're going to do much better than what a lot of people feel may be happening. And so I just move forward I try to be positive, and I'm willing to talk to anybody.
Have you lost friendships?
I haven't lost friendship. Well, I wouldn't say they've been outwardly lost, but there's clearly a change in the relationship. And I have had to really work on my internal feeling about people that I know who voted for Donald Trump and are willing to continue to support him. And I'm still working on that, to not be as critical of their decision in my mind. I don't say it outwardly, but in my head. But I still struggle with internally with people who are okay with the things that he's done to our country, the things that come out of his mouth, and I struggle with that. I do.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to cleanorigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to cleanorigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's cleanorigin.com, code RADIO10.
Who's someone who's a Republican that you really admire?
There were three Republicans that I can think of that have stood up to Donald Trump. It's weird to say I admire that they did that because they were really doing what everybody should have done. So in my really opinion, they were doing their job. But in this climate, it seems like the bar has been set so low that just doing your job, if it's done correctly, we all jump up and down and go, wow, look what you did. But Mitt Romney and Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, I don't agree with their policies, but they did draw a line in the sand. It took a couple of them longer than others, but they did draw a line in the sand when it came to Donald Trump, and I have to respect them for that because it could not have been easy considering they knew they're not going to probably get reelected into their positions, and there probably was a lot of pressure from the Republican Party that they had to feel that I will not understand, and so I admire them for that.
I say you always know when someone's courageous because they paid a price.
They paid a price. They did.
They did something that was not expedient. It was the opposite of expediency.
Right. It's very true. And so I give them a whole lot of credit for that because they were working in, I'm sure, in a very stressful environment with a lot of pressures coming at them. And like I said, they knew, which is sad, but they knew they would not get reelected if they took that stand, and they did it anyway, and I admire that.
Your kids are out of the home now. You've got a boy, a son and a daughter.
Yes.
What did they say when you said, "Kids, I'm going to Raleigh"?
Well, our daughter is an activist, so she was just so excited. She's finishing up her third year of law school, and I think she's going to work towards women's health care, is become her women's rights, and she was really excited. My son Jonathan, I think, was excited, but he's so used to me being home and sort of here that I think he was, the feeling I got is he was just a little like, so now what does this mean? He had a lot more questions about exactly where am I going to be and how many days a week and where am I going to be sleeping and exactly how is this going to work? But he is excited too. So excited that he helped me with my website.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
And we need teenagers.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
To explain
in a lot of ways.
Memes.
Exactly. Exactly.
So your kids are Gen Z. People constantly carp about millennials and Gen Z in my presence, and I have three millennial daughters and a Gen Z son. And when they do, I say, you need to meet my kids. What is it that you see in Gen Z that gives you a lot of hope based on your kids?
Oh, I agree with you. When I hear people harping negatively about Gen Z kids, I don't have that same feeling. Those kids give me hope. One, at least with my children, they are way more aware of social issues than I ever was at their age. They're much more involved, and I think a lot of it has to do with social media. So they see it, and of course, our family has always been very aware of things that are happening and tried to give back as best we could. But those young people, they give me a lot of hope because of that. They are much more aware, and they want to really make things right. And they're much more accepting of people who are different than they are. They're not afraid of someone who doesn't look like them or doesn't love like them. They are very accepting, and I see that across the board with most Gen Zers and the young people. And I just think it's awesome, awesome. And they give me a lot of hope.
How about voting and political involvement?
They definitely vote. Our children were brought up to understand the importance of that. My daughter is much more politically active. She's marches and all the marches. And what even made her go to law school was after what she watched what happened to George Floyd. And she felt like, I don't know how I can make the changes that need to be made unless I really learn about the laws and all. And that was what catapulted her into deciding to go to law school.
That's amazing.
They're both amazing, but she is definitely our activist. Of course, my friends all go, wonder where she got that from.
Have you been to some marches with her?
Yes, yes, yes. We did for gay rights, and we did the women's march here in Charlotte together. And yes, we have definitely marched together when she's here. Now she's in Portland, Oregon in school. But when she was in Charlotte, we absolutely did.
What are the biggest stereotype or misconception about Democrat?
I think the misconception is that we're all elitists, and we're not. Yes, a lot of Democrats are educated, but you know, a lot of Republicans are educated. My husband and I really were surprised several years back when we kind of looked around and we're like, well, we're not elitist. I don't know where that's coming from. I think what I love about Democrats is that we're working towards, we're not doing everything perfectly, but we are working towards trying to make the world a better place for everybody, not just a select few. And we haven't done a great job in the past with everything. And I think a lot of people recognize that. And I'm hopeful that we are more on the path of correcting that and moving forward. And this term woke, I don't find that to be an insult at all. I'd much rather be awake at the wheel than asleep. And I feel like, yes, there's a lot of things that I've realized since these past 8 years that I've been more active in politics and helping getting candidates elected that I just wasn't aware of because I was busy raising my family and I was working. I was helping my husband run his practice from home while I was a stay-at-home mother. But I'd much rather be considered woke than not. And we really, really are trying to work towards, you know, people that you have health care, that you have an education, that you can love who you want to love, that you have clean air and clean drinking water. These are not crazy things to want for everybody. You know, that you have good health care. And so that's what I believe in, and that's what I think the Democratic Party believes in, and that's what we're working towards.
What's a traditional Republican value that you think Democrats could learn a lot from?
So this is a little opposite of what you're asking me, is small government. Mm. They always say they believe in small government. They do not want the government in your life. And I'm like, really? You know, when they go into a woman's doctor's appointment and when they're basically have put themselves in a woman's most private area of her life, that's not small government. When they're banning books, that's not small government. When they're telling teachers what they can teach, that's not small government. So it's just a big fat lie. And what I see, that's what it is. It's just a big fat lie. So that's where I they tout that all the time, and that's not how they're governing right now. They're interjecting government in the most personal ways of people's lives, and it's wrong.
Do you think that you'll have a certain amount of, I don't know, gravitas or respect in Raleigh by virtue of you've been around for a while, you're not a co-ed, by virtue of having worked in the healthcare and by virtue of being a mom who's raised kids and sending them out into the world? Do you think those things give you a kind of cachet or, you know, street cred in Raleigh that you can speak to something?
I don't know. We'll find out, because I'm certainly going to be speaking to things.
Have you met many folks in Raleigh? Do you know who you'll be
working? I have not been to Raleigh yet, but John Autry, who held the seat and is retired, has invited me to come in April, and he said that's a good time to come. The short session will be happening, and I come up and just kind of go into the legislature, sit in, and get a feel. He sent me some pictures, so I have not been there yet to get a feel of it all and to meet the people.
Did he offer any advice and counsel about how to make an impression or how to sort of introduce yourself to people there?
He just says to me, Julia, be yourself. That is going to be enough. And he's also said, don't be in this alone. If you feel you need to talk to somebody or need advice, reach out to me. Reach out. I'm here. He has been a really, really great friend and mentor since I signed on the dotted line in December. He's been awesome. He's been awesome.
Have you already sort of been inundated with subtle and not so subtle lobbying, like people all?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
What does that look like? What do people...
I've had everything from, Julia, I need one more recycling bin. Can you get more recycling bins? That
potholes.
Yes. To, what did my physician friend want me to,
did he have a bill typed up for you that he was ready for?
Yes, my friends, I've got, could you get this accomplished? Can you do that? So, yes, that's been really interesting. And then I get a lot of things online where these different organizations, and I've had to really figure out what's legitimate, what's not. And John has helped me with that, because there's a lot of just sign this and, you know, we're working towards this, and we'd love to have your signature. And it's hard to know what's legitimate and what isn't. And I get a lot of those. So John has helped me kind of siphon through that and choose the ones that were worthy of filling out, I should say.
I'm wondering, when it comes to what parties do you go to, or what receptions, or what... You know,
you could have some 2 and 3 things every single night. It's amazing. The invitations you get. So I do have to prioritize. I am a social person, but that's a lot of social activity. So I pick and choose. I think certain things are really important, especially things that are in my district. So any of my precinct chairs, if they have something they want me to come to, I absolutely go to it. I also have gone to the LGBTQI+ events, and I've gone to the Black Caucus events, and I'm hoping to connect with the Latino events. And I feel like they need to meet me and know, you know, what I believe, my issues, and that I support the things that concern them. So I want to make sure I do that. There's a lot of events, a lot of things you could attend, a lot of invitations, and you really have to figure out, because you can't go to everything. That's what my husband keeps saying. You've got to prioritize, Julia. You can't go to everything. And plus, I've got months. I can just spread it out and and go to the events that I couldn't maybe go to this month, I could go to it maybe in a couple of months when they have another one.
In, could be 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, or whatever, if you could fast forward and say, I was part of the vote that changed blank, what would be the one thing that you would be proudest of?
Getting the right to abortion codified. I think I don't agree with it being at the state level. I think it needs to be a federal law that a woman has the right to choose when she wants to start her family, if she wants to start a family. I don't believe in forced pregnancies at all. And women should have bodily autonomy. I don't think that Julia here in North Carolina should have more rights than Susan in Georgia. Because Susan in Georgia may not have voted. She may be a pro-choice Georgian, right? But maybe she's too poor and can't get the health care she needs, and she can't get across the state lines to North Carolina to get the care that she needs because she's got three jobs and she has four children and she has no transportation. I mean, it's, again, people living in the gray area and their own life circumstances. I believe it needs to be a federal law across the land. And I think those Supreme Court justices who said they would uphold precedent and then they lied about that and they went in and they took away Roe v. Wade, they should have been fired. They should not allow to be, if any of the rest of us lied on a job interview, we would be fired. And there they sit now for life. And they said they would uphold precedent, and Roe v. Wade was a precedent, 50-year precedent, and they did not do it. So we have to fight back, and that's top of my list. Top of my list.
What movements across the country have given you real hope about how this has staying power, how people for reproductive rights have not gone away? They have not forgotten.
It's not so much the movement, it's been the special elections that I've seen.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
That even in Kentucky, you see that this is a big deal. Women and men. I have seen men come out and say, I want my daughters to have the rights, have those rights. So it's been more the special elections that I've seen since Roe v. Wade was disbanded that have given me hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's shocked some people.
Yes. It was shocking and cruel.
Go ahead. Go ahead. This is why God made editors. Yeah. And there's just been, just from the point of view of basic biology, just a startling amount of ignorance.
Startling amount of ignorance. We can debate all day long when life begins. Science says one thing. The Bible contradicts itself. But what should never be up for debate is a person to have the right to control their own body. That should never be up for debate. And that's what's up for debate right now. And we need to correct that.
After I had four kids, I had a vasectomy. I can't imagine anyone saying, no, no, you can't have a vasectomy. I can't imagine anyone saying, if I go into a convenience store, that if I have enough quarters, I can't buy condoms.
Well, let's be honest. If men were the ones who had babies, there would be a drive-through abortion clinic on every street corner. And we all know that. So it's everything about it. And we know the exceptions that the Republican Party talks about are not really exceptions. That 11-year-old child had to be taken across state lines to get the health care she needed. Here in North Carolina, Mark Robinson, who is the Republican candidate for governor, is ready to roll back the abortion laws here in North Carolina to 6 weeks, but he's also on recording, on audio, has said he wants to make a complete ban. No abortion at all, doesn't matter circumstance. This is the Republican candidate for governor here in North Carolina. Besides all the other horrible things he said, that's one little snippet.
Yeah. What I've said is, there are people like Governor Jim Martin, was a Republican, came out of Charlotte, Mecklenburg. Mm-hmm. You know, Richard Venroot. And these people, Richard Venroot was a Moorhead Scholar, who won the Bronze Star, was awarded the Bronze Star. You know, these were people that you looked up to, and you might not agree with their philosophy or their politics, but we looked up to them with respect.
That's true. They weren't
talking about, you know, Muslims should be banned, and, you know, it was a day and age. North Carolina had governors who saw education as the way to economic development. And now you have the North Carolina Chamber is saying they're worried about the impact of the superintendent of public instruction, whose kids don't go to public schools.
Right.
So she wants to enforce her view of public instruction on the people who actually do use public schools.
Right.
It's like, if you want to homeschool, homeschool. If you want to go to a private school, private school. If you want to go to a Christian school, go to a Christian school. But don't run for that office. And I think it's interesting because the NC Chamber, not exactly a bastion of liberalism. They're just very pragmatic about what this means for business, like big business wanting to locate here.
Well, they're not going to come here if she wins. And the other piece to that that I see with the, which is another piece that I'm very interested in, is the voucher, the school opportunity voucher program, which is just does nothing but siphon taxpayer money out of our public schools that already need more funding, and giving it to private schools. And here in North Carolina, most of those schools are Christian schools, and the Republican supermajority has taken away a whole lot of parameters on checks and balances of people who can apply for the voucher program. So you can be a multimillionaire and get subsidized for your private tuition. And then you look at children coming from families where they're not, you know, where they struggle. They may get the voucher, but the voucher does not pay for the full tuition. So the family has two options. They either have to find the money to subsidize the rest of the money that would be owed for that private school tuition, or now they'll send their children to a public school that has become more defunded. And I looked up, and I believe there are 9 counties here in North Carolina that do not have private schools. And they're even calling a private school, you know, K through 5. You know, so you've got 9 counties, and most of them are rural, so you know who's going to be affected is your rural communities, the most vulnerable children. So there are 9 counties that don't have private schools, so money is still being taken out of those counties, and I would imagine those schools are big employers of the people who live in those counties. So then economically, you're devastating those counties, because then your teachers can't be paid, bus drivers, your maintenance workers, your cafeteria workers. On top of, you're affecting the public school education because the resources won't be there because there's no funding. Our public schools should be the opportunity schools. We should put more money into them and raise the teacher pay. But the supermajority, the Republican supermajority here in North Carolina, that's not what they're doing, because they want to religiotize this state. They want everybody to be a Christian. And honestly, if you're not a male, heterosexual, a white male, heterosexual Christian, you're a target of the Republican Party. And it's wrong on every level. what they're doing. And that's something else that I am going to fight against when I go take my seat at the table in Raleigh next year.
I respect you tremendously for getting involved. I respect your time, and really thank you. If we got struck by lightning today and the only thing that survived was this little digital recording, what is your legacy?
I hope my legacy will be that I made a positive difference, that I tried. I stepped out of my box, and I'm going for the gusto, and I'm ready to do the work.
Congratulations, Julia.
Thank you, Stuart. I appreciate you.
And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for being interested.
If you want to know more about Julia Greenfield and follow her career, you can find her online. You can find her at Facebook. Fascinating person. And we need more people, especially more women, to step up and run for office. Makes the world a better place, in my humble opinion. Thank you, Julia. Thank you for your service.
In Her Words is a production of the Queen City Podcast Network in cooperation with Balto Creative Media. Allison Andrews at Andrews Creative, Rachel Clapp Miller, and Roshonda Pratt are developmental producers. Sally Higgins at Higgins & Owens tries to keep us legal. Our music is A Day at the Park by the group Pictures of the Floating World. Your announcer is Catherine Smith. That's me. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and take a moment to rate and review. It really helps others find us. If you love us, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com. Look for Man Listening, one word, no spaces. A small investment makes a big difference in lifting up the voices of women.
A huge shout out and thank you to everyone who has supported me, manlistening.com, In Her Words, the podcast, and now voicelocket.com from the very start. Thanks so very much.
Thank you for your support. We believe one voice can change the conversation. Thanks so much.
Don't pay retail for your diamond engagement ring or gift. Come to CleanOrigin.com. Founded by a leading family in the diamond industry for more than a century, we're experts in lab-grown diamonds because that's all we do. Clean Origin, the only diamond jewelers who give you a 100-day, no-questions-asked return on your purchase. Head to CleanOrigin.com or one of our retail stores and mention code RADIO10 for 10% off your purchase. That's CleanOrigin.com, code RADIO10.